Welcome to Rewatchable episode 149. We're almost at 150. That's so exciting. My name is Selena and I'm joined this week by Ariana, Kristen and Caitlin to talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer season 2 episodes 9 and 10, What's My Line part 1 and 2. Very exciting. Before we get into the episode, let's start with our contact information. If you want to talk to us about this or any other episode of Buffy, spoiler free of course, you can email us rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter @re_watchable. You can find this post on hypable.com, which is hypable.com. And you can find us on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. So many ways of taking contact. You have no excuse not to do that. Before we start talking about Buffy, let's talk about ourselves in fun facts to help you distinguish our voices. I'll let Kristen go first this week.
But of course. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
My fun fact for this week is that yesterday, Karen and I went to AMC and watched 4 of the Best Picture nominees all in one day, and it was fabulous. We saw Brooklyn, Spotlight, The Martian, which we had already seen, and Revenant.
Which one do you like best?
I think of the 4 that day, I really liked Spotlight the best, but it's a really, really tough choice between Brooklyn and Spotlight because I really loved Brooklyn.
I like Brooklyn too. I think someone talked to me about that and said, oh, it's so annoying because like literally no one is mean in that movie. And that's what I like about it.
There's a little bit. Everybody has, you know, a little bit of underhandedness, but nobody's like outright evil, which is the reality. Like that's the world.
Exactly.
And yeah, I like it. It was really good.
And Caitlin, what's your fact?
My fun fact is that spring training has just started for baseball, so I'm amping up for baseball games this week. I get to listen to baseball on the radio for the first time in like 6 months, which I'm very excited about, even though my hometown team is not going to be very good this year.
Well, I wish them the best. I know nothing about that, so. Ariana, do you have one?
Yeah, so this past week, Fuller House came out and I have not gotten the chance to see it yet, which is a travesty because I had to watch like 10 hours of Buffy yesterday, but I have been listening to the theme song and I love it. So all you haters out there, you're probably right. It's terrible, but it's really fun.
See, I have no desire to watch it because I just don't want my childhood ruined. I just can't. It's too cheesy. Mm-hmm. I can't do it.
I think you have to like accept the cheesiness. I watched like the first 10 minutes of the first episode and it's terrible in a really fun way.
I don't know. I just don't know if I can do it. I have to get really desperate. There has to be a lot more hours of Buffy for me to watch before I do that. but yeah, no, that's fun. We actually have a review of it over on hypable.com if you listeners are interested in hearing what one of our other writers thinks. But my fun fact leading nicely into Buffy is about Buffy. I have 2 actually this week that are kind of relevant. First of all, the girl who played Kendra, who is of course Bianca Lawson, a real life vampire who never ages no matter like how many years pass.
She looks great.
She does. She looks exactly the same.
Oh my god, she was in Pretty Little Liars.
She was.
Yeah.
Of course, because she still looks like a high schooler.
She was just on Teen Wolf like 2 seasons ago, and everybody was like, she looks really young. I'm like, she looks the same.
She always looks so weird. But anyway, she actually originally auditioned to play Cordelia. So that's kind of fun. And she's one of those people, like all of the many girls who auditioned to play Buffy, they like all got roles in the show. Like she also got a small role in the show, which I think is kind of nice. Accent not included, but we'll get to that. And another fun fact is that in the second part of What's My Line was actually when Spike was originally considered to be killed off, back before they'd cast James Marsters and realized how much the fans really liked him. So, yeah, when that piano landed on him, that was actually supposed to be his exit. And it's kind of interesting that they chose to keep him around for an indeterminate amount of future episodes. So, yeah, that's just sort of fun to think about. Moving along into our discussion of What's My Line Parts 1 and 2, we're going to do them together because they are 2 parts of the same story. Reading the synopsis, just something takes some water, this is a long one. In these episodes, the Avatar is reincarnated from that one time Azula struck him with lightning in the Avatar state. Oh, I love when I don't get this. Yeah, this is of course when Buffy drowned, a new Slayer was called. It is career week at Sunnydale High School, but all Buffy wants to be is a fabulous ice skater. Willow is tapped by a high-end computer tech genius CEO, as is her soon-to-be love interest Oz. In the meantime, Spike calls upon some assassins to do the Slayer in so that Buffy will be distracted during Drusilla's healing ritual. At their skating date, Angel is beaten up by a Cyclops-ish assassin before Buffy slices Cyclops' throat with her skate and kisses Angel's hideous vamp teeth inserts. Oh yeah, gross. As the two suck face, a mysterious woman watches on in fury. After shoving Angel in a cell, the woman reveals that she's the Slayer during an attempted assassination on Buffy. Kendra, the other Slayer, and Buffy decide to let bygones be bygones and work together to stop Spike before he's able to translate an old text to bring Drew back to fighting fit form. The next morning, Cordy and Xander have a bug-filled adventure with a traveling salesman assassin. Oh yeah, and their angry, sexy, super mega foxy, awesome hot, angsty couple now, and you have to deal with it. At the high school, a policewoman assassin accidentally shoots Oz, but don't worry, it's only a minor flesh wound. This all ties together in a torturous finale that finds Angel and Drew in the middle of a Sire energy transfer. The Scoobies show up, kick some tails, squish some bugs, and practice their hammer throw skills on Drew Psych. Interesting. Kendra, while not having eaten any Twinkies or unsuspecting high school principals, still leave Sunnydale a much more chill and friendly Slayer. Willow and Oz bond over monkey crackers, wearing conservative clothing, and Candor, oh, did Mitch write this? It's full of ship names.
Yes, this is Mitchell wrote this. Thank you, which I'll talk about later.
Okay, and Candor shove their tongues down each other's throats. Crumble, grumble, sizzle. Drusilla the Dark arises fabulously and powerfully from the ashes of the church fire, assuring a damaged Spike that she's back in business and is going to own this shit. Okay, note to self, practice that beforehand.
That's the longest synopsis ever.
Well, it was two episodes. Yeah. I want to say that was supposed to be my fun fact. I want to say special thanks to Mitch because he did the doc this week for me since I had a really busy week, and so yay, thank you Mitchell,
thank
teamwork
you, Mitch. And thanks for that Avatar, those are always appreciated, I'm sure. This is really our first big two-parter in Buffy, and I really want to know what you guys thought about this format and this sort of long continued story.
I'm always game for a longer story. It's a show, so the story continues anyway, but I mean, I always love getting a chance to like see a story take up a little more time than just 45 minutes, like happy ending, you know, ta-da, done here. So yeah, I was totally happy and fine to see this little saga take place over two episodes.
Yeah, I think that's like, for me, this is the point where Buffy begins to get really good. Because obviously, you know, when you watch the whole thing, you can go back to the beginning and you can be like, yeah, this is so good because it's foreshadowing for blah, blah, blah. But when you're watching it for the first time, I think this one is when we're picking up the story, you can say. And it's not to say there's not some clunkers coming up, but I really enjoy it. I think it's a very cool format. So career week is the topic of What's My Line, very fitting. Have you guys ever done one of those?
No.
No?
No.
This was not a thing.
I don't think it's a thing in the United States, period. I think they make it up.
What? I've been
we
to
did
like
vocation
three
tests,
career weeks.
But...
Oh, you guys did vocation tests?
But they were like random things the guidance counselor brought when we were like freshmen, and we like did it in a class.
Oh, yeah, see, I've never done anything like that.
We had like a college/career fair where like a whole bunch of places came in and talked to the students, but it was all voluntary. We definitely didn't take any job placement tests. So yeah, that was the most ours involved.
That's I don't know so how weird. I feel about job placement tests, because in some ways I feel like it could be limiting or crushing, like if you don't get the one you want.
I think it's just career, like, it's kind of like Hogwarts house quizzes. I don't know. It's kind of like, you know, you learn more about
exactly.
your personality.
Exactly. And those are traumatizing enough as it is. So
it's true. That's true. it was a very good way of sort of shaking up the students a little bit and allowing, you know, we got a little insight into potential future careers of the Scoobies, and Willow got a chance to meet Oz, which was fun. What did you guys think about that meeting?
I think it's interesting that they mentioned that Buffy should be a cop, because that would make it like plausible for the show to keep going. Because I'm wondering, like, how's this show going to go on after she graduates high school, like next year?
Mm-hmm.
And if she was a cop, I think that would be really interesting, because that's like how we see so many of these shows, you know, like Sleepy Hollow or the X-Files, or I don't know what they are on the X-Files. I'm just making that up, but I'm assuming they're cops. Like half the shows on TV are about cops.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a way to integrate and keep the story going if she became a cop.
I actually agree with you. I always found it a little bit strange that she was so derisive about like that potential career path, because it is kind of perfect for her. And sort of, yeah, in retrospect, I think that's true. She would make a good cop. We'll have to see if that comes to anything in the show. But she could work with Xander, who would be a prison guard, so it'd be perfect.
they could set up their own monster wing at the prison.
Yeah, exactly. Like the asylum in Batman, but for vampires. It would be great. But talking a little bit more about Oz, because this was the first time that he got to interact with Willow, and he even got to interact with Buffy a little bit when she knocked him over. And Willow comes into the special executive room, and they offer her canapes, and she has this little meet cute with Oz. I liked it. I thought it was cute.
I like that their first exchange is just canape.
I know.
Romance is in the air.
Yeah. Or is it? I mean, do we like it? Maybe it's too weird. I don't know.
He's
not
adorable.
Weird at all. Why is it weird?
I don't know. I always found that Oz, like, I don't know. I didn't when I watched it when I was younger and I didn't speak English and I didn't get anything. Like, I always found him odd to adjust to, because I didn't know Seth Green. I didn't know how awesome he was. But now I just think it's adorable. So I'm glad that you guys agree.
Well, and we've been primed to love him because he already has admired Willow from afar.
Yeah,
so.
That's why I like him.
And that little look on the couch when he realized it was her.
Yeah, he's like, oh my gosh, it's her. He's so excited.
And it's just so good. And also at the end, I mean, I know we'll get to that like much, much later in the discussion, but when she thanks him for saving her life, and he doesn't really want to talk about it, but he does want to talk with her, and he makes cute jokes, and it's just what's not to like. I love it. Actually, moving on in the discussion a little bit, speaking of potential couples, this week also saw a huge development for Cordelia and Xander.
Gross.
Gross? No. Tell us why.
Because Xander's terrible, and obviously Cordelia is in love with Angel, so no, this is gross.
Yeah, well, leaving aside Cordelia and Angel's epic romance for another time, I think that, I don't know, I always, this is one of those couples that I'm always very torn about, and I'll be very interested to hear what you have to say, Caitlin, because I partly agree with you, Ariana. I think it's a very, especially nowadays, because we see so many of those types of relationships on TV, it seems a little bit cliche, but actually I think at the time it was unexpected and it was sort of an interesting turn of events. And who's to say they're going to be together now? Like, I don't think we're led to assume that.
Oh, I don't think so either, because they obviously don't like each other. Mm-hmm. I think they're just going to be like enemies with benefits.
Right.
Like,
right.
They're the hate sex couple.
Yes. I think she could be really good for Xander because he needs a strong woman to kind of slap him around. And I think Cordelia could provide that.
I was going to say, I think
yeah,
that
but
is...
she deserves better than that. She's
true.
Have to be that.
That is absolutely 100% true. But I do think if we're looking at Xander as a character, I think it's a really good thing for him to have someone who isn't Buffy, because clearly the Buffy thing is awful and the Willow thing is not a thing. So I think this could be very interesting depending on how they choose to develop it in the future. And I sort of, it's a welcome development from my perspective. And I also just love that sweeping music that came in every time they made out. I thought that was,
that
funny.
Was funny.
That music was amazing.
It's like, yes, they know how ridiculous it is, so they put that in there. We also have a little bit of trivia about the Scoobies this episode, because Xander calls Cordelia a Scooby. I think Mitch is keeping an eye out for that, so that must be the first time that it's mentioned on
the
show.
Yeah, it was. I noticed that too.
Hmm. So it's finally canon. And we sort of led to believe is this was always the plan for Joss Whedon to call them the Scooby Gang, because Willow was already wearing a Scooby-Doo t-shirt in season one. As far as I know, Caitlin, feel free to correct me, but that's just what they called them sort of in the writer's room. And so it just kind of wrote itself into the show.
I don't know the background on that.
No. Of course, it's highly ironic considering that both Sarah Michelle Gellar and Seth Green end up in Scooby-Doo the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, no, anything else to say about Cordelia and Xander at this point? No? That bug adventure was gross, yes?
Oh my God.
So gross. Why did they have to show that?
As soon as he showed up, I was like, oh, I forgot this was the bug guy episode.
I know, it's cringe. Disgusting. But you know what I think it was? I think this was an opponent that Cordelia and Xander legitimately had a chance to beat. Like, I think that's what it was, is because they're basically, like, they're the two most useless characters in the show. Like, they have no skills. So literally, if they'd put them up against anyone else, they would have died. So a guy out of bugs, that's sort of, you know, they can handle 1,000 bugs. They just can't handle the guy in one. But yeah, gross. And like, what is with all of these assassins that just take on different shapes and stuff? I think it's cool, but also weird. This was definitely the weirdest one. Did you guys see the Xander Cordelia thing coming at all?
Yes, like a mile away.
Mm. Oh, they've really?
They've been broadcasting Xander's hate for her for so long that it was only a matter of time before they had one of these, like, we're trapped in a room, we hate each other so much, now let's make out moments. Like, it's just kind of, I don't know if it's a 90s cliche or if it's just a thing.
No,
but
it's a trope at this point.
For me, like, the only redeeming thing about Xander was that he wasn't the guy who was, like, yes, he loves, like, every hot girl, but he was also able to distinguish, like, the difference between Buffy and Cordelia. And he, like, genuinely did not care for Cordelia's, like, egocentric nature. Mm-hmm. So I feel like they just ruined the only good thing about him. But I didn't see it coming until they were in the basement or whatever. And then they start walking to each other. And I was like, no. No, this is like Joey and Rachel all over again.
Oh,
so gross.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good comparison, actually. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say what's going to come of this, especially because, you know, we don't actually want to say what comes of this. But I do think he still doesn't see Buffy and Cordelia in the same league. And honestly, like, that might be a bigger problem than the fact that if he did. Because I do think this Cordelia and Xander thing, I think the good thing about it right now is that they see each other as equals, and that he isn't putting her on a pedestal, and she definitely is not putting him on a pedestal. And so they're kind of, their shared low opinion of each other kind of plays very well for me. But it's also super strange. And again, I think Xander is not there for us to necessarily like him unconditionally, so this will just add another layer to that discussion. But we'll be able to talk about that in future episodes. So for now, let's focus on something that is kind of a big deal for the show, even though we've kind of been talking about it ever since Buffy died in the season one finale, which is that there is another Slayer. Your theories were correct. When Buffy died for like 5 seconds, another Slayer was called, and that Slayer is Kendra. Yay!
That was... Okay, this is so awesome. I'm so glad they addressed this, because remember... Well, you don't remember. But, like, what Mitchell said, in Avatar, they had something, like, this similar, where he, like, died for a few... Or he died for, like, a little bit. And then the new Avatar was never born, and we were like, that's a plot hole.
Right.
But I'm glad that... Because they said she actually died, and now we know that, like, for reals, she died. So she fulfilled the prophecy, and no plot holes. Yay.
She's like, I only died a little.
Yeah. And now, of course, the question is if we actually think that Kendra... I mean, obviously, she left at the end of the episode, but do we actually like her? Do we think she's a cool addition? Before we get into talking about Kendra and her accent, I do have one thing that I would like to say, is that when I was young, and... when I didn't speak English, and when I watched this for the first time, I, for some reason, didn't really like Buffy that much. I thought she was a little whiny. And I loved Kendra. I thought she was so cool. I thought
she was, good. Then you were right.
You're right. And I thought she was so awesome. And she came in there, and she was, like, so different from Buffy. And she took the whole responsibility thing very seriously. I couldn't hear her accent, because I couldn't hear accents. So I just thought she was cool. So that, you know, never detracted for me. So I think I always have a soft spot for Kendra. What did you guys think of her?
Good. I think that Buffy is a racist, ignorant bitch, and Kendra is, well, she is what Joss Whedon made her, so...
I think Bianca Loss, I don't know, Caitlin, maybe you can help me here. I'm not sure who got the idea for that accent.
I don't know.
But it was weird. And
they said she was from Jamaica, right. So she has a fake Jamaican accent. Right. That's fine. That's not even like my biggest issue with this. But why don't you guys have a conversation first before I ruin everything?
What did you think of her, Kristen?
I mean, I thought it was nice that they didn't just make the Slayer another American, because it would have been really easy for them to just throw another random American teenager into the mix. So it was nice that they actually had her come from a different country, from somewhere completely removed, because if there's only one Slayer in the whole world, then I would assume it wouldn't just, you know, the second one wouldn't just pop up in America. Mm-hmm. Yes, her accent was kind of awful, but... it didn't really distract me all that much. I mean, maybe at first, but after I got used to it, it didn't bother me. I mean, it was just a part of the character, so it didn't, you know. But I liked her. I mean, I liked Kendra. I thought she's basically what Giles wishes Buffy was, like completely focused and dedicated to being the Slayer at all times. And I liked that in a lot of ways she was kind of Buffy's opposite, but by the end of the episode they were able to see each other and like what each other brought to the table. And so I really liked Kendra. I thought she was a really good addition, and hopefully she comes back at some point.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Caitlin?
I've always loved Kendra. I mean, she is meant to be a foil to Buffy, obviously, and is studious and takes everything so seriously, and she doesn't care about anything that Buffy really cares about. So she's such an interesting contrast to see kind of what could have been, and maybe a little more insight into how this whole Slayer thing works outside of just what we've seen with the dynamic between Buffy and Giles. And it tells us that maybe they're a little more atypical than we realized, because there are only lens into it.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And especially, I think it's especially interesting when it comes to Giles, actually, because he's obviously the watcher of a Slayer who's had a previous watcher, and he had to sort of pick it up on the fly when he got a hold of her, and he decided not to give her the Slayer handbook, and he decided to be a little more loose. And also, I mean, speaking about Slayers that come from all over the world, while we know that there are other forces out there fighting back the darkness, you know, the demons and stuff, the Slayer is usually called in the place where she is needed the most. So Buffy is called in Sunnydale because that's where the huge... or she's called in America, and then her mother moved her to Sunnydale. We're kind of led to believe that's for a reason. And so when Kendra is called in some different parts of the world, it must mean that something, like, there's much demonic energy in Jamaica, but her watcher sort of determined that she, you know, they needed her more. And I don't know. But anyway, it makes sense. And I'm also glad that it wasn't just another American, because, you know, I would have felt very forgotten otherwise, being non-American. So I appreciate stuff like that. Also, another final thing, and then we'll get to what you were going to say, Ariana. But I also think it's very, very cool to learn that Slayers are called at different times, or rather are discovered at different times in their life, because Buffy obviously was never told that she was a Slayer before she was called. So we're kind of sort of led to believe that she, like, they didn't necessarily know that she was a Slayer until she was called as the next one. Whereas Kendra was, they always knew that she was destined to be a Slayer even before she'd been called. So she was sent to a watcher and raised, and all of it. It's just like the tip of the iceberg of all this Slayer mythology. And I know you guys talked about the Tales of the Slayer books last week that I, again, highly recommend. I think they're fantastic. And you see much more examples of Slayers called at different times of their lives under different circumstances. Some of them are discovered when they're born. Some of them aren't discovered until they're called. Some of them maybe not even then. And it's just, it's so cool. And I love it so much. And this is just like opens the door for more of that in the show. Ah, so cool. Anyway.
I really appreciated that Kendra wasn't just called, like, I mean, Buffy died, what, a couple months ago? Mm-hmm. I liked that she wasn't just called and poof, had magic fighting abilities and was a kick-ass fighter. Like, she's been training. Like, she's been training since she was a little girl. She's been with the Watcher forever. So I thought that was a really great way to explain how she was so much, you know, more advanced than anybody else would be, having just been called.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I thought that was really, it was really well done. So to know that that's all part of Slayer mythology, like, that's even more awesome.
Right. And Buffy obviously feels threatened by a lot of what Kendra stands for, which is sort of the proper Slayer, I think. What were you going to say, Ariana?
These two episodes are just really uncomfortable for me to watch. So I know we've been talking about, like, the accent, but for me, like, the issue with Kendra, it's not even about her accent. It's unfortunate that it's terrible, but that's, like, what it called for. So that's what the actress did. And I don't, like, the actress is fine. What bothers me is that I think that she's a problematic character because of Buffy's history, or lack thereof, really, of representing people of color. Like, so far, the only ones we've seen are the Inca girl, who was a total stereotype, and now we have Kendra, who's, like, a total stereotype. And they're both from out of the country, and Sunnydale is, like, 99% white in Southern California, which just makes no logical sense in any way. And honestly, it just, like, really is infuriating to me. This episode was so blatantly racist, and, like not even subconsciously racist, like, it was just racist. Like, Buffy was racist, and that's because Joss Whedon wrote her like that, and they thought it was funny to make her make fun of Kendra's accent and use, like, mangled Spanish on her. And it was just, like, really uncomfortable for me to watch, and I did not enjoy it. It made me angry, and yeah, that's it.
I don't know if Buffy's making fun of Kendra was meant for us to find it funny. I never did. I always found it very, not then, maybe uncomfortable, but I always found it showed a lot of, it showed Buffy's bad side. I think Kendra brings out a bad side of Buffy in this episode, and I think we were kind of meant to notice that as a bad thing.
But she's supposed to be our hero. Like, well, I don't understand. Like,
I don't necessarily think she's meant to be unproblematic.
Okay, I understand that now it's 2016, but, like, if we are watching 2016 now and we had a heroine who was, like, being racist or homophobic or something like that, we would not be expected to root for her. Like, she's the central heroine. She's not, like, an anti-hero. She's a heroine. And I understand that it's, like, 20 years later, but it's still infuriating, because that doesn't mean it was okay back then for Joss Whedon to be doing this.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think it is true, definitely, that us seeing it through the lens of 2016 makes some of these things very, very obvious. But I will say for Buffy as a show and for Buffy as a character, I think you would be surprised by how many people watch Buffy, but they can't stand Buffy herself. We talked about this a lot, and sort of related to what you were saying when we did our Buffy special on Hype, and we all sort of were surprised by the fact that many of the people who are on this rewatchable find that Buffy is their favorite character, because in the fandom, actually, a lot of people are like, I really love Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I really don't like Buffy, and that's why I like the show, because you're given this heroine who is not perfect. Like, Buffy is at times, she's petty, she is like selfish, she is whiny, she is all of these things that makes, at times when I watch Buffy, she's been my least favorite character at points, you know, then I've liked her in some rewatches and some I really don't. She's never been my favorite. And I think this episode really, the things that you're talking about are absolutely true, and I think that is definitely something that needs to be addressed. But I think in a general sort of character building for Buffy, it was always meant to be negative. We were always meant to see Buffy's pettiness and her taking these blow shots at Kendra and her being extremely jealous, and that comes into play later in the show as well. And I think it, from the writer's perspective, and Caitlin, maybe you have something to add to this, but I think they are very sort of consciously trying to make us not always side with Buffy, sort of question whether we actually want to root for this character.
I mean, I'm one of those people who has Buffy as their favorite character, and I like that she's very human and she's flawed, because it's very easy to make the blonde cheerleader type, like, let's make her completely rootable all the time and to make her petty and a teenager, basically, right, and not perfect and have these issues that she needs to grow from. That makes her a more satisfying character for me. So I don't disagree with what's being said, that she is problematic in this episode, but I think we should give her the opportunity to grow. And if she doesn't, that's one thing. But it is, like, I'm not saying we should defend the way she reacts to Kendra in this episode, because I don't think we should.
Okay, but I'm sorry to be so, like, negative. I mean, I'm not sorry, but I feel the need to say I'm sorry because I'm a woman before I speak. But do you see how, like, now we're turning it all around to Buffy? Like, now this is just making me angrier, because now she's just serving as, like she's just feeding into Buffy. Now it's, like, totally taking away her agency, which they do. I mean, she's her own slayer, but she comes and she leaves, which doesn't make sense. I feel like they should have just kept her. But it's really infuriating to me to watch the way Buffy has treated people of color on its show. And it's like, it's not something that I feel like I can ignore anymore. And it's really it's making me angry. So that's all I have.
How do you feel that Kendra is being mistreated? Just so I understand.
Well, I already said that, but I'll go ahead and say it again. I think that she's problematic because she is the only Black girl we've had on the show who, like, speaks. Unfortunately, that means that she is a representation for how the show sees all Black girls. That's just how it is. If they had other people of color on the show, then it wouldn't have to be like that. But because she's the only one, just like the Inca girl was the only Hispanic girl they've had on the show in a state where there are literally more Mexicans than white people, they become a representation for how the show views all people of that race or ethnicity. And that's problematic because Kendra is a stereotype. It would be okay if she wasn't the only one. Yes.
Well, this is a whole other long discussion. I would just say, from my perspective, actually, I see Kendra as the one having the upper hand in all of her exchanges with Buffy. So I think it's interesting that you view it that way, because I always thought that having Kendra there made Buffy look worse on purpose. Like, Kendra is allowed to be the better Slayer, in a sense.
But that in its own way is problematic. She's only there to validate or invalidate Buffy.
That's true. But then if we look at it that way, all the characters are there to validate or invalidate Buffy, because she's the main character. But, you know, you are right. I think the show, there has been a lot of talk in the media about how Buffy sort of took a while to actually have good representation on its show, which it did not have in the first couple of seasons. I think the closest thing we get is Charisma Carpenter, who is half Latina. So yeah, that is a very, very good point. And the show sort of realizes that as we go on. Do you have anything else you want to say about that, or sure, we'll have other opportunities to talk about it?
Nope. No.
Okay. Well, moving on to, ice skating, because that transition makes a lot of sense. Buffy is ice skating with Angel in this episode. And, there's a note in the doc here saying that Sarah Michelle Gellar must be really well practiced in figure skating. And in fact, she did. She used to be a professional figure skater when she was younger. So I think it's one of those things where the show sort of has to write in, like, when suddenly in One Tree Hill, Haley begins to sing, it's because the actress is a musician and stuff like that. So they have this really nice little ice skating scene. And then Buffy and an Angel fight off a Cyclops thing and make out, which gross. Sorry, Caitlin, but I think it's gross. And Kendra sort of watches them creepily. At this point, do we still think that she is one of the assassins?
I mean, we're definitely meant to assume that she's part of all of that. You know, like, that's the whole point of the reveal at the end of this episode, is that, you know, all of these random assassins have shown up at once, and she happens to show up and be an amazing fighter. Like, that's we're meant to see it that way. So, yeah, I did think she was one of the group that was infiltrating Sunnydale at the time.
Mm-hmm. But she abducts, or what does happen? Oh yeah, she does. She abducts Angel, and she locks him up with Willie the Snitch. And Willie the Snitch. Now here's another character who is weird. Caitlin, what do you think about Willie the Snitch?
He just, at least at this point, he feels a little out of place to me.
Right.
Like
he's from another time. They like plucked him out of the 30s or something.
Yeah. Like I kind of. On his own, I kind of like Willie and the idea that there's, like, bars where monsters go and have drinks. Like, that's kind of amusing. But in the way things have been set up, like, he definitely feels, like, tonally different than the rest of the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does. You're right. He's weird. But he is kind of funny. I don't know. I can't decide what I think about him.
He's like that simple character that you find in a lot of these, like, period 20s, 30s movies. Like, he's the simpleton who runs the shop that the gangsters come and shake when they need information. Like, that was exactly what I got out of him. And he even had, like, a random accent to throw into the mix. Right. And I was like, what is even happening right
this
now?
This is the episode of accents. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Like, Willie the Snitch, random, kind of funny character, but, you know, he was fine. It's definitely entertaining, that's mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah, this whole addition of the bar is kind of like, I've been playing a lot of Fallout recently because apparently I'm a geek at video games and I never knew that before now, so I'm a bit surprised. And it's like one of those places you come to for your next mission. It's a little bit strange, I think. I never really understood it, but he does help out Kendra and Buffy and Spike, for that matter. He sort of seems to be playing the field. Do you guys see him sort of being used more in future episodes?
I wouldn't be surprised if he reappeared. Mm-hmm. He was fairly entertaining, and he served a purpose, so I could see them utilizing him again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Spike has abducted Angel because he wants him used for the Sire restoration thing that's supposed to heal Drusilla and restore her to her full powers, and he sort of gives her to Drusilla to play with, and they have a little strange torture scene which sort of gives us a little bit more backstory about Drusilla, because, you know, she talks about all the people that Angel sort of tortured. Oh, are you guys interested in Drusilla's history at this point, and Angel and Spike and all of that?
I definitely find it, like, interesting. We've gotten a lot of it. Like, we know that Drusilla, that Spike is Drusilla's sire, and we know that, you know, there are other things that we've been told and put together, and like how Angel treated Drusilla and what he did to her. Like, we're privy to all of that now, but there definitely is something else there. Like, Spike and Drusilla are way too close for how, like, broken she is, because she's, even in this episode, like he says, you know, we'll restore you. So there's something about her that's not right. So yeah, I am definitely intrigued. I'd like to know more about how the three of them, like, came to be mm-hmm. the three of them mm-hmm. and each has their role. So like, I'm definitely interested in all that.
Yeah. And there's sort of an allusion. There's been a lot of allusions to Angel and Drusilla sort of there being more to their relationship. You know, he goes like, take care of her, Spike, the way she touched me, you know, I can tell when she's not satisfied. And I'm, ooh, it's all just so weird and kind of icky, I think. Does that aspect intrigue you, Ariana?
Not really, no.
Well, we'll have to see if they can manage to ensnare you with that one. So what about the whole Sire thing? They use it a lot in this episode. Is it clear to you guys what that means?
I mean, to me, yes. But I've known that word and its general meaning in the mm-hmm. vampire world for a long time. Mm-hmm. So it didn't surprise me.
Yeah, it's like in Vampire Diaries, right?
Exactly.
And they literally define it in the episode.
Do they? Oh, yeah. I totally missed that.
Yeah, they're like, Buffy goes like, they need Drusilla's sire, you mean the vampire right. who made her?
Right, 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 right. And that yeah. all sort of becomes clear, right. Okay. And there's some stuff about, like, Drew being able to see the future and all that, which may or may not pop up later in the show. And then it all culminates in the final fight in the church, where, you know, we have a few questions in here thrown in by Mitch that I'll sort of throw out there. Was the cop assassin supposed to be anything supernatural?
She was one of the assassins, right? Like, yeah. The group. Yeah. That's what I thought. She was just wearing the cop uniform.
Right. I don't know if she could have been human. I mean, there's nothing to say that humans couldn't join that. It seemed to be made up of all kinds of creatures, so she might have just been an evil human.
Sure. I just assumed she was using the cop uniform to, like, get onto school grounds.
Right. Like, yeah, probably.
Yeah. So, I mean, she could definitely be human. I just figured the cop thing was just a ruse. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's another question is, are we going to continue to see more of these assassins? Because Angel and Giles were sort of very insistent that they'll keep coming, kind of like Slayers. I will say that, honestly, I'm not really sure, but I would imagine that Spike and Drew sort of have the power to call them off, right?
And they were like, they're the ones who like hired them. Yeah, so exactly. They could just be like, you're not needed anymore. Exactly. Or we're not going to pay you anymore or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think they just keep spawning just randomly. I think they need a reason to go after Buffy. And it's also a question is if it was too much of a deus ex machina for Angel to be able to live while still restoring Drusilla, because there was so much about him having to die.
Well, the ritual didn't complete, so I assume that's why he was alive, because she pulls out the thing binding them, so... But and when Spike grabs Drusilla, he's like, I hope that was enough.
Right, yeah. So do we think it was enough? She seemed strong at the end.
She seemed pretty dang strong at the end. She, like, holds Spike up by an arm.
I really love that.
I thought it was hysterical. She's, like, holding him up by one arm. I'm like, that is really awkward. But you definitely get across that her strength is back. Like, that she has been restored in some, you know, we don't know to what extent, but in some fashion, she's definitely stronger than she used to be.
Exactly. And I really love that role reversal, too, because it sort of harkens back to the fact that in Buffy, like, women's power is never questioned. Or if it is, it's like very sort of out of place because women are just like not even a question. Like a Slayer. Yep, she's a woman. Who cares? Like, she's strong. Yeah, well, she's the Slayer. You know, it's not a woman thing. And I think it's we're sort of seeing a similar thing here where Drew and until now has been like super weak and just sort of the damsel in distress who has literally needed Spike to save her. And now that is all sort of paying off in a really big way because she gets to be the one who coddles Spike, like literally carries him out of the church. Now she's the strong one and now she's like, who knows where that's going to go. But I really enjoy that. I think it's very symbolic, that shot of her carrying him.
Definitely has the religious imagery.
That too. Yeah, that too. I didn't even think about that. Oh my God. I was just like, yay, girl power. And the question remains now. I mean, obviously, now that Drusilla has risen, will she take over Spike's role of resident vamp badass? Or will they be co-badasses? Or what's going to go down with that? Do you guys have any theories?
I don't even know where to go with Drusilla. Like, didn't he call her, like, his black goddess or his dark goddess or something earlier in the episode? Like, I'm intrigued as to what exactly Drusilla is and what she, like, she's something more than just a vampire, because even in her, like, depleted state, she was able to see the future and kind of foretell things, and she was advising Spike. So in her completely restored, now, you know, like, super powerful form, I'm interested to know what exactly she's capable of, because it definitely seems to be more than just your average run-of-the-mill vampire.
Mm-hmm.
Did they ever say what was wrong with her? Like, what do they mean by sick? I always thought it meant that because she was crazy, but now we know she went crazy before she was sick. I mean, before she was a vampire. So what do they mean by she's sick?
Well, I don't think they ever... Really, I think what it was is they talk about an angry mob in Prague. Mm-hmm. And I think what sort of at this point we know is that she was almost killed. Like, vampires can be weakened severely to the point of almost death. And whatever that vampire or that mob did to her, it was like almost to the verge of her death, but she was just left sort of in a permanently weakened state, you know, which she has now been cured of, which I don't think has anything to do with her mental state. Would that be accurate to say, Caitlin?
That's always been my assumption, that it was all about the mob that they reference.
Right. And I think it's more than anything specific about Drusilla. I think it just sort of shows that vampires can be affected by sort of some mortal weaknesses. Like, they aren't just like either they are dust or they are super strong ninja warriors. Like, they can be somewhere in between depending on what has happened to them and what they've been subjected to.
And that's true of Angel in this episode, too, because yeah. you'd think at full strength he would have fought back a lot more, but he was weakened from the exposure to the sun.
Exactly. And it just sort of gives another layer to, you know, what vampires are and how they work and stuff. And there was actually one other thing that I wanted to talk to you guys about that we didn't really get around to during that whole, like, ice skating thing. But Buffy and Angel, the relationship at this point, just a quick roll call. Are we into it? Are we not into it?
Into it.
You're into it.
Wait, yeah. whose relationship? Buffy and Angel? Oh, no, most boring thing on the planet. I hate it.
What do you think, Kristen?
I'm definitely into it, especially after, like, the scene in the church. Like, she genuinely cares about him, and it's clear from that scene, so I'm invested.
Okay, I'm glad, because I am 100% with Ariana on this one. I am very not into the Buffy and Angel thing at this point in the show, and I'm very sorry, because I feel like such a fraud of a fan for admitting that, but Ariana, what is not catching your attention with the two of them?
Well, I think I already went on my rant about this before, but people can hear it again. I just feel like they're so dull. All they do is, like, brood and be like, oh my gosh, but I love you, but oh, I can't trust you, but I love you, right. But like, then I'm also like, but why? Like, they just never really establish their relationship for me, which, I mean, and I've said this before, they make sense in real life. Of course teenagers, like, don't have to have a reason for being in love. They're two hot people. Like, they're in love. That's what teenagers do. But this is like a TV show. So for me to feel invested in them, like, I'm usually not invested in teenage relationships, I need to be able to see why they're in love. And I feel like they never showed us that. There was never like a progression of their relationship. He just showed up and she was like, oh my God, so beautiful. And then they fell in love.
Yeah, which, as you say, is a valid reason. But I think that's, for me, that's actually, and has always been, one of my issues with the early, up until this point of the show. And that's why I wanted to talk about it now, because I think it's finally, around these episodes, I'm finally beginning to feel the Buffy Angel thing more. And I think overall, looking back on the show, I'm like, oh yeah, Buffy Angel, oh yeah, that's cute. But every time I start a new rewatch, I am always like, oh, why do I like them again? Like, why? Because I think that you're, in my opinion, I think you're right, Ariana. They haven't, the show hasn't earned it. Like, the big words they use, the sort of over the top, like, but I love you, but you're, you know, you make me want to die or whatever. Like, that kind of language, it feels out of place, because we only ever get those moments. We hardly ever get the low key sort of. And Angel sort of has way more personality when he gets to interact with some of the other characters, like Willow or Giles and stuff like that, or Cordelia, as you say. But I do think that's, you know, again, why I wanted to talk about it now. I think at this point it does sort of start to feel more real to me. And I think it is because Angel is suddenly in a lot of danger. So you do sort of feel like, okay, actually, yeah, this whole life or death romance they have going on actually is because they're always in life or death situations. So their dramatic, passionate intensity is fueled by the fact that the two of them are so entrenched in life or death, basically. But it, again, it's not until now that I'm beginning to sort of see it. And anything up until this point has felt a little bit unearned. So I hope that, obviously, as the show goes on, if anyone else, like, sort of feels the same way, that you'll continue to have an open mind if maybe you get more invested, or maybe you don't. Maybe some people never do, and that's totally fine. I don't think you watch Buffy for the romance. I don't know. Am I wrong in that, Caitlin?
I mean, people watch for what they're going to watch for, but I don't think it's, like, trying to be the romance show. No. It's just part of the story.
Right, exactly. I definitely don't watch it for the romance. Anything else you guys wanted to bring up that we didn't mention before we get into favorite lines and scenes? No? No Principal Snyder in this episode. I was very disappointed by that.
He was in the career fair stuff.
Was he? Ugh, why do I not remember? It's been too long.
And he and Xander have a funny little exchange.
Yes. See, oh my god. This is why you shouldn't do other stuff while you watch the episodes, guys. I thought I could do that and still remember, but clearly I cannot. Oh, that's another thing to say. When we get into the future episodes, I hope you guys are planning to watch in full screen and not do anything at the same time, because it might be interesting. Favorite scenes? Caitlin, what do you have? Speaking of Buffy and Angel.
mine was the one that was just getting a lot of hate. Aww. So I like when they're on the ice rink and Angel's like, don't look at me, I'm hideous. Or she's like, I'm the beast, don't look at me.
It's so Beauty and the Beast.
But I don't know, I think it's kind of sweet, and she's just proving that she loves him for him and doesn't mind that he's got this other side to him, and I think it's sweet.
I think it's so gross. I do think it's sweet. The scene is very sweet, but the imagery is gross. I think the vampire faces are very... And as if what if, like, he accidentally bit her in the mouth? Like, I can't... Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so rude to your ship. It'll get better, I promise. Kristen, what is your favorite scene?
I actually liked Buffy and Kendra's fight at the end of the episode that kind of led into part two, because I liked the reveal, the I'm the Slayer. It's like, wait, whoa, hey, what? Because Karen and I actually watched the first episode, and then, like, I didn't get a chance to watch the second one until this morning, so I didn't know exactly how that was going to resolve itself, so I think that's why it kind of stuck with me. But I really liked that little reveal. It was good fun.
Yeah, I did too. Mine is a little bit of a random one, but I enjoyed everything with that vampire with the glasses, because what was his name? I don't remember his name, but I really like seeing other vampires aside from Spike and Drusilla that have more personality than, like, your average grunt vampire, because I think it's sort of, we've spoken a lot about, like, what it means to be a vampire and, like, what it means not to have a soul and how they sort of absorb their host's personality and stuff like that. And I think it makes so much sense to me how some humans are just have stronger passions than others. I think really what vampires absorb from their humans is their passions. So humans that are have less personality are more likely to become fully demonized and be, like, fully evil. But a vampire like Spike and Drusilla and this glasses dude whose name I can't remember, they have something else that is sort of grounding their humanity a little bit more. And for him, it's books. And I think that's very, very cute. I just really enjoyed that scene. Ayana, do you have a favorite scene?
Yeah, it was when Seth Green saw Willow and then he was happy.
Oh, that was a good one. Canopy line. Very, very cute. Favorite lines, Caitlin?
Mine was at the very beginning of the first episode where they're doing the, like, vocation test, and Buffy goes, do I like shrubs? To which Xander replies, that's between you and your god.
So random. Like, for the longest time, I didn't know what shrubs meant, so I thought it was like in a moat or something. So it was a fun line. Kristen, what's yours?
Mine's between Xander and Cordelia. Xander says, Cordelia Chase, always ready to give a helping hand to the rich and the pretty. And she says, which, lucky me, excludes you. Twice. And then Xander looks at Buffy and Willow and says, is murder always a crime? Just good
the two
times.
Of them are like the definition of, you know, there's a thin line between love and hate, that kind of situation.
Yeah.
Which unfortunately has become way too common in TV shows these days. But at this point, I thought it was nice. Mine was very simple. It was Angel's, you know, someone asked him, like, how do you know all this stuff? And he's like, I look.
I laughed so hard.
Yes.
I was like, that's exactly how he gets his information. He lurks.
Like, and he's so deadpan about it. And I think it was Natalie.
He is hilarious. Mm-hmm. Like, I love him.
I like the last batch of episodes. He was like, you know, I perfected my brooding skills.
Yes, that's what I find so funny, is that he's, like, so funny, but he says it, like, in a really deadpan way, like you said, Selena. But, like, he knows he's funny. Yeah. But he doesn't have to laugh at his own joke because he knows he's that funny.
Yeah, it's true. And it is sort of, you know, you don't really realize it's a joke straight away. And you have to, like, sort of think three times about it. But then it just gets funnier. I think that's so true. And I think that, as I was saying, like, Natalie brought up such a good point last episode, that they are doing all this on purpose, because David Boreanaz, based on some of the things he does later in his career, you know that he's a really good actor and that he can play up to this deadpan, overly broody thing really well. So when he's sort of presented, and that's why the scenes with Buffy to me are so weird, because it, like, literally every other context, he is this hilarious deadpan.
Exactly.
Weird. And then he's with Buffy and then he's like, oh my God, the world will end with a final kiss. I think it's a little strange.
That's why I'm saying he's in love with Cordelia, because she's funny too. he likes her.
You know what? You're right. That that works better, doesn't it? But, you know, again, let's give it time. But I liked it. I thought it was really funny. What's yours, Ayana?
Oh, so I did not like this scene, but I did really like this line. And it's when, like, Angel's like, oh, you shouldn't have to see me like this.
Oh, gosh.
And Buffy goes, I didn't even notice. I was like, ooh, Buffy, that's a ball of line. Good job.
It is. It's kind of like, you know, this, like, I don't know, this is going to sound really stupid, but, like, you know, in those really cliche movies where, like, the guy sees the girl without makeup and he goes, I swear I've heard that exact line in a movie like that. And they use it, but, like, with vamp face. I think that's really strange, but also kind of cute. It does give her brownie points. Favorite scenes, part two. Caitlin.
Am I going to get hate for, like, everything I choose this episode? Jeez.
No.
You guys are all hating on my favorites.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to be honest because, like, I love the show, but not unconditionally.
Anyway, my favorite scene in part two that nobody better hate on because there will then be fighting words are when Buffy and Kendra say goodbye, and, like, especially Buffy, like, trying to hug Kendra.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, I don't hug. She's like, right, hug's bad. And she gets that little smile on her face. I don't know. I think it's cute. And they have this nice moment of talking about slaying being who you are as opposed to a job. And I really like it. It shows that they've grown a lot. They both have for the short time that they've known each other.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Kristen, what about you?
Mine is Xander and Cordelia in the basement. Everything about that is just entertaining for me. They have the best lines between the two of them, I think, more so than most of the other characters at this point. And the music that kicked in the first time they kissed,
oh,
like, I just lost it. So I thoroughly enjoyed that scene. It has no, like, grand scheme of meaning for the show for me, but I just thought it was really entertaining.
Mm-hmm. Mine is kind of along the same lines. I love when Cordelia is squashing that larva guy. Like, when that's her contribution to the fight, is just kicking her heels at the larva things. I thought that was great. I love her so much. I love her so much. Oh my god, I'm so glad that the show is finally giving her a chance to be awesome. What is your favorite scene, Ayana?
When Willow and what's his name ate the cookies.
Oh,
Seth Green. What is his name? Yes, I can't remember his name. Seth Green. Yes, they ate the cookies.
Yeah,
that was cute.
That was very, very cute. And I think, Caitlin, you have the line to go along with that.
Yes, so Oz being adorably awkward, and he says, the monkey's the only cookie animal that gets to wear clothes, you know that? You have the sweetest smile I've ever seen.
Aww.
So I'm wondering, do the other cookie animals feel sort of ripped? Like, is the hippo going, hey, where are my pants? I have my hippo dignity. And, you know, the monkey's just, I'm monkey with my monkey pants. And then there's this big coup at the zoo. And Willow says, the monkey's French? And he goes, all monkeys are French. You didn't know that?
Oh, I love it so much.
I think the sincerity with which he delivers those lines makes it that much more endearing. Like, mm-hmm. It was so adorable.
He's a very good actor.
He is. But again, maybe he's just being himself. Like, you know, it seems very, very sincere and very, very cute. And my favorite thing is just Willow's face. Like, just from a viewer, I hope that this works, because just seeing her look at someone like that after knowing how much, like, crap she's dealt with Xander and Buffy and all of that, like, I think it's time for her to get someone that is hers, you know, in the way that Oz really seems to be at this point. So I'm very happy. I think it's true. She does have a very sweet smile. And I love that Oz sort of brought that out with his crazy monkey dialogue.
All the nice things for Willow.
Yes, yes. Kristen, what is your line?
Mine came from Spike, and it was when Willie the Snitch and of Random Vampires delivered Buffy to him at the church, like, while he was finishing the Angel Drusilla, you know, restoration thing. And he says, are you tripping? You bring her now? You bring her here now? I just laughed hysterically when he's like, are you tripping? Like,
why?
Like, he wants to kill the Slayer. It's been his goal, like, from the second he stepped foot in Sunnydale.
Mm-hmm.
And Snitch thinks he's, like, got it made. Like, I'm bringing Buffy to him. Like, this is awesome. And Spike looks at him, takes one look at Buffy, and that's his reaction. Like, it made me laugh. I just love it so much.
Yeah. Mine is a line from Xander. He goes, hey, Angel's our friend. except I don't like him. I love the delivery. I love like how Xander is so quick to be loyal, but then he realizes that he's loyal to someone that he hates. And it continues one of my favorite parts of the show, which is the non-friendship between Angel and Xander. I think it's amazing. And I do think, to Xander's credit, I think his dislike of Angel has a lot... like, it's more than just the fact that Buffy likes him. I think it's also, you know, his hate of vampires is kind of playing into it here too. And I think that's all very, very interesting. Ariana, do you have one for this one?
Yes. So mine was when Buffy was being a bitch and being like, I do things my way. And Kendra's like, no wonder you died. I was like, fam, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with Kendra on that one too. Like,
Buffy, I wrote that down. Yeah.
Buffy is just so stubborn and stupid in this episode. I really think so.
She's also just wrong. She was like, mm-hmm. Oh, that's why you study so much. That's why you don't have any creativity. You don't have any imagination. And I was like, Buffy, you had no imagination in that fight. The first thing I thought was like, look at that girl's earrings. You're not going to pull off her hoops. Like, what is... No, so...
That is a very good point. I think Buffy overestimates her own abilities sometimes. And that may come into play later, but I think that adds something interesting to her. Okay, well, I think that's the end of our discussion, but we do have some listener feedback to get into. If you, listener, want to send in your feedback on What's My Line or on the upcoming episodes, which I believe are Ted and Bad Eggs. Is that correct, Caitlin?
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
I'm going to try not to
be. We won the lottery here. So, yeah, with that glowing endorsement, if you want to send us your feedback, especially if you love the upcoming two episodes, we'd really like to hear from you. You can email rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet @re_watchable. You can find this post on hypeable.com, and you can find us on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. iTunes reviews. If you rate us 5 stars, then Selena will have 2 men in suits escort you away from school to join her for an elegant tasting of some excellent canapé. Included is a picture of said canapé, which does not look very tasty. I thought that was sushi and I got excited, and then it wasn't.
I know, it just looks like bad sushi.
It does. That's no, you can still rate us 5 stars and not get the bad sushi, I promise. So Twitter feedback, Caitlin and Kristen and Ariana, do you just want to take one each?
Sure, I'll take the first one from Mandy K. She says, I'm so happy that Brittany is starting to really like the show. I was so disappointed that she didn't like it at first.
I know, now we just need to win over Ariana and we've...
Yeah, I'm the only holdout.
Makes life interesting.
Once Angel and Cordelia start a talk show where they just like give out advice. I think that's when I'll like it.
Yeah? Yeah. Well, yeah. Stay tuned, I guess. I hope that happens. The next one, Caitlin?
Sure. Stephanie Merrill says, I was 7 years old when Buffy premiered and Giles was my fave. He had a lot of books. It was a big selling point.
Yes.
I hear that.
Same. Chris?
Sure. And Sarah at Magic is Might, nice screen name, says, suggestion for a future rewatchable, BBC Merlin?
Oh my God. Oh, thanks, Mitch. Insert, put it in here for me.
Yeah, I was going to say, insert Selena fangirl. Just go right ahead.
Yeah.
She's not the first person to ask this. And last time we talked about it, we were like, no, we already have talks of Camelot.
But yes. We don't have that anymore, so we have no excuse. And Anthony Stewart,
you guys did all the episodes. You guys did all the episodes already.
But they're not on... Andrew deleted them forever from the internet, so...
No, they're still there. No, they're not in iTunes
gone.
Anymore?
No, they're not. They're all
Wait,
gone.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Why would he... That's a travesty.
Sad. Maybe he did it so Rewatchable would have a chance to do it. No, he didn't. He just wanted them gone. I don't know. But anyway, I would be totally for this. We actually, I think we have on Hype, we did a Merlin special a couple of months back where we sort of went back and had a little retrospective discussion. Merlin would be a weird one to do in Rewatchable because there are so many bad episodes. I say talking about the early seasons of Buffy, but maybe I would be there for that. I promise. Emails. Ariana, do you want to get this one?
Oh my
the
gosh, you're right. Sorry, I was like Googling. They really are gone. He really got rid of them. Mm-hmm. The email, yes. Hello, my name is Casey McKee. And I am an avid listener to Mugglecast. I remember hearing you on Mugglecast, Selena, and a huge Buffy fan. So when I heard that Rewatchable was doing Buffy, I couldn't have been more excited. First, I wanted to commend you podcasters on taking on the giant feat of analyzing such an iconic 90s show. Your analysis is always enlightening, and I just wanted you all to know how important this podcast is to me and to many others. Thank you to exclamation marks.
Thank you, Casey.
So no pressure.
Don't yeah, pass. No pressure. But if you don't love it. No, that's great. It's so good to hear how many like Buffy fans are joining us for this rewatch. It really, this like rewatching it with newbies is really making me think like about what truly makes Buffy great. And I mean, it is great. But a lot of it also comes, I think, on the thing that TV shows don't really do anymore. Things like foreshadowing and stuff. Buffy does so much of that. And you don't get that until you know what it's foreshadowing. So I do think that area sort of is maybe left out. But again, you know, the part of the fun is what hearing the newbies sort of be skeptical about some things. And maybe they end up liking it, maybe not. We'll have to wait and see. But we hope you guys will stick around anyway. Hear our discussions. And the final comment, I don't know, either of you guys can get it, Caitlin or Kristen, whoever starts
I'll
talking
first. So Matt Todros says, "Lie to Me is one of my all-time favorite episodes of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. The final lines of the episode are one of the core themes of the entire series. Good and evil are not always clear-cut, which is what makes sometimes doing the right thing difficult. And on a side note, I am beyond excited that Sarah Michelle Gellar will be reprising her role as Catherine Mertulli? I haven't seen Kroll intentions, so I have no idea.
What?
I am so excited too, although, I mean, TV show, who knows how good that's going to be. Fun fact, in Denmark, Cruel Intentions is actually translated to, in English, sex games, which meant that when I was 13 and got the movie with Buffy on the cover, my mother thought that I was buying a porn film. So that was unfortunate.
That title is scarily accurate, but
I know.
Yeah,
they really dumbed it down for the international audience. but you're right; it is actually what the movie's about. Cool. Thank you so much for those comments, and I also, by the way, I agree. But Lie to Me, thought it was really, really good. And that is the end of Rewatchable episode 149, 150. Unless you guys, is there any plans on the special? Like the. Are you guys doing anything for that?
We may be doing a live stream.
Okay.
We're still planning it.
Well, stay tuned and keep up with the re_watchable Twitter account for more details on that. I'm personally hoping that you do so that the big 150 will actually be like the advent, like the anniversary and not Ted and Bad Eggs, but see what happens. Okay, well, until next time, it has been a pleasure talking about Buffy as always. My name is Selena.
My name is Ariana.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Kristen.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.